Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Hello?
That's my mom out there. I only have my mom is out there, and that all that was from just my mom. She's just so excited she can't contain herself.
What
Welcome,
about your dad?
Hello, this is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which has changed recently. The grapevine, through the auspices of the GSO, that's not the KGB, that's the General Service Organization of Alcoholics Anonymous, has just produced a sponsorship book. It's called One-on-One Sponsorship. This is quite a turn of events. The first time in 78 years have they decided that sponsorship should come to the forefront of the understanding in the recovery world. We couldn't be more pleased. We feel like now we have an Avis to our hearts. A Macy's to our gimbals. I think this is going to be a world changer, and we couldn't be more excited about it. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH. It's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Arkansas. And they do this as a public, Alabama. We're not in Arkansas, we're in Alabama. Why would you need Arkansas if you have Alabama? It's a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the a finer recovery journal that affords us some print space from time to time. I'd grateful like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does the fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe that families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation, so does the country, so does the world. Most of the problems with drugs and alcohols we have today, in my opinion, is about children growing up without receiving correct principles at their home. Now, their parents really didn't have correct principles to give them. Some cases, latchkey kids, folks aren't there, it takes two paychecks to run a family anymore, and there's nobody there to watch the kids. So we depend on the schools. It's not the school's job, folks. It's the family's job to help the kids out with what the correct principles of morality and society look like, and nobody's home. So they grow up on the mean streets like empty lot weed kids. And then what happens? The prisons fill up. If you go to the prisons, Harold goes to the prisons carrying the word, and most of the people in the prisons are crimes of opportunity, drugs and alcohol. There's some career criminals in there, but the vast majority are crimes of opportunity fueled by this disease. So Harold goes and works with families trying to help that. Now, that's a tough job because families are, you know, mom and dad have their way, and the kids have already, you know, decided they're going their own way, and he tries to put it together. I like to think of Harold like the starfish thrower. There's a red tide brings millions of starfish up onto the beach, and there's one fellow down there, and he's picking up a starfish, and he's flinging it back into life, back into the water, and back into life. Another fella comes up and says, hey, there's millions of starfish here. You can't save them all. No, but I can save the ones I can save, and that's what we do here at Rum Radio. We save the ones what we can save. Harold, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joseph. Thank you for that introduction. And I just want to take a moment to mention that this is offered as a public service. We're not paid. Joseph doesn't make any money on this radio program or on the website, rumradio.org. It's dedicated to recovery and especially to working with other people. That's what really makes the wheels turn in recovery. So, in fact, Joseph has sunk thousands of dollars into both the website and the radio program, and it's just our way of giving back. I owe my life to the 12-step programs, and I carry the message all the time, and this is one more way we can really emphasize what really works best, and that's taking somebody that's new in recovery and teaching them the 12 steps. That's what this is all about, and I consider it an honor to be on the program tonight and listening and talking. And so I encourage you all to call in. Joseph will give the call number, and you can also go to rumradio.org and you can log in and chat. We have a chat room open. So you'll see in the upper right corner it says live radio. Click on that. You can go and log into our chat room. So back to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. Before we get started, I usually like to start off with a third-step prayer. In the meetings of recovery, we usually start with a prayer. It's called an invocation. We invite in the Spirit, and I think that's a good way to start any kind of function. And usually I connect this up with sponsorship. When someone gets a beginner's chip in one of the meetings that we go to, and that's what they're coming through the doors, people aren't usually going to the hospitals in Skid Row. I put this together. I can go to Skid Row, that I already know. And like in Bob and Bill, I can go to the hospital. Now I hear tell they come in under their own steam, washed but not clean, and desperate for simple instruction. The next time this golden opportunity walks through the door, I will push and shove and help them find their seat so my own recovery becomes complete. It's a newcomer. They're walking through the doors, folks. Golden. Now, you can go to halfway houses, three-quarter houses, rehabs. They're always, always crying, begging for sponsors to go in there. And we have to get out of ourselves to go do that. And, you know, once we get into recovery and we get our life back, you know what happens? We just don't have enough time. We're living again. We got our life back. And this. Sometimes it's just not enough time to give it back. Go to a meeting, go to plenty of meetings, but actually to go on, get on your horse and to go help the other guy, sometimes that's a little bit more than we can handle. It's okay, 20% of the people are doing 80% of the work, just like in the real world. So when a newcomer comes in the door and I got my radar out, and he gets a beginner's chip. We call this a desire chip. It's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. Are there any takers? And sometimes they'll come up and say, yeah, I'm desperate, I'm in pain, I'm going to get that chip, and they get it. At the end, we circle up, and we usually have the benediction at the end. You see our Father, third step prayer, some kind of chant, acknowledging that we've had a spiritual community, acknowledging that. And then after the prayer, I go up to the new guy and I go, have you had enough? If he's had enough, he'll know immediately what I'm saying. Or he might ask, what do you mean? Have I had enough what? I say, have you had enough pain? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough? Yes or no? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. You can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I give them to do is I carry around when I'm looking. I believe luck is nothing more as when preparation meets opportunity. Now you're getting lucky. So I carry Clancy Eyes 7 Questions. It's on the website underneath the sponsorship tab. It's all in words, so you can print it out. I give them these seven questions, really little probing seven questions, not a lot of work, but here you go. What I'm doing is I'm qualifying the prospect. These fellows are called prospect. They're not sponsees yet. They're just prospects with a chance of a good conclusion or success. I'm qualifying the prospect. Okay, I need you to answer the certain things you have to do. The first thing I need you to do is answer these seven questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. I expect your call. One of two things will happen. Either he will call, and he's taken simple instruction and demonstrated that he's willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety, or he doesn't, which means he's either not ready or he's not ready for me, which is okay. I go somewhere else. Personality sometimes is fairly aggressive. It's not for everybody. And all, like everything in the program, we make a suggestion. If it works for you, great. This other, the big book says we sit down with the prospect. We have a chat to see what they're going to do. That works too. But usually once they get the beginner's chip, you don't have to chat so much. He's made his commitment that he wants to do something better. So that's the way I go. Other people do it different ways, but I find this really productive. If I get it back, I give them assignment. You need a home group. That's your lifeline group. And in that group, I want you to get the names of 20 or 30 men if possible. And so this way now you have a lifeline group, you have a home group, and every day for the next 30 days, I want you to call one of the men on your list. I believe it's men for men and women with women. It's easier to identify with the same gender. But the key is you work the steps. If it doesn't work out with the same gender, well, you know what? You work the steps. We can always change sponsors if it's not working out. So now you call one of these guys and you recite the third step prayer. The third step prayer is found in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 63. We are not Alcoholics Anonymous. We are not NA. We're not CA. We're closer to Paranoids Anonymous, but nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. This is Rum Radio. You like that? This is rumradio.org. We use the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous because all 12-step programs come from this understanding. Everything else has been duplicated from this basic text. All the understanding of the 12 steps originate, and I like to use the original understanding in text. It's good. It's all the information we need. Bill W. said in his last speech, AA will change. AA must change. The message will not change. It's the right message. What will change is the method of getting out the message. That's the change, how we get it out. The message stays the same. It's the right message. The message works. It goes like this. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. But there are those that are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They're not at fault. They seem to be blonde that way. There are those, too, that suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. They, too, can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. This is an honest program, and once you can get honest, it could work. If you can't get honest, they give you a pass. You seem to be born that way, and you're going to have a couple choices. You're going to die, you're going to go in prison, or you're going to go crazy. So pick your poison, kiddo. This is the third step prayer. Now, I have them go to the reason why I do the third step prayer. One is to get them used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Two, it connects them up with their fellowship, with their home group. This is their lifeline. They get to know his name, and he gets to know their name. Third, the third step prayer is also called the surrender prayer. It also gives them an idea of what we're going to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And the fourth reason, the person he's calling might be thinking about picking up his first drink, his first hit of crack, or whatever, and the chances he won't. There's no guarantees, but now your sponsee's already into service, and that's the key we found to long-term, to attaining and maintaining long-term sobriety, is in the application of service. And this is the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tonight we have a special duel. I call it a dynamic duo guest. We have Maddie and CT. If you go onto the marquee, gives you a little upgrade on CT. I've known CT for a couple years now. He's got a great program. He does some circuit speaking. It's a recovery family. He's got 25 years, and I believe Maddie's got 22 years. She's a black belt Al-Anon. Whoa, that's scary. That's scary. I believe every alcoholic should have an Al-Anon. It should come in the program. Yeah, I believe Adam and Eve had that going. Eve was the Al-Anon, and Adam was the alcoholic. They don't tell you that. It wasn't really the tree of life. It was the vine of life, and it was wine. I'm only kidding. Anyway, so I want to introduce you to Maddie and CT, and what they're going to tell us is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and how they keep the family afterwards cooking and going and growing. CT, say hello.
Hello. How are you guys tonight?
We are great.
Well, thank you.
It's nice to be on.
So tell us what it was like, CT. What was it like when you first, when did you fall? Okay, back when?
Well, look, that's fantastic. First of all, I want to say thank you for inviting us to be on tonight. Quite an honor. And it's very interesting. So I like to give you a little background of myself. Like I told you earlier, I've been blessed to be on the railroad for over 40 years now, on the backside of that. But God saw fit in 1988 to change the course of my life. So that's when the ball got rolling, December 9th. I think Hal and I celebrate in the same month, in December.
That's right.
It got hot in December. I had started that recovery process when I noticed a guy asked me in the treatment center. He said, you came in, it was Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, you missed all of that. I hadn't given that even second thought. The heat was on. It was time to do something about that deal. So I'm tremendously blessed that.
I wanted to get up a little earlier, CT. Like, when did you finally realize you had a problem with alcohol and drugs? What was your jumping off point look like? How did that work? How did you work into? When did you find out the first time you took a hit or you took a drink and you said, wow, man, I'm cool?
I've always thought I was cool, but I tell you what, it's kind of hard to look cool when you only got two or three teeth in your head and your afro is dried out. All the coolness is gone. When your friends started looking down at you, I really thought my friends was looking down at me, but I understood later in the program that they actually wasn't looking down at me. What the look was, the look of disgust, because they knew I could do better. They knew where I came from and what I had turned into. So it's a totally different outlook now since I've been blessed to be clean for a while than what it was when I first came in.
Well, when was the first time? I mean, did you start drinking when you were a kid? Or were you 12 years old? Were you 9 years old? Were you an alcoholic in the womb? Did it come later in life? When did the party start?
Man, I think I was a teenager. I first started dibbling in alcohol and smoking weed. In fact, the lady who raised me owned a beer joint, two beer joints. But I'm not going to say that's what made me alcoholic or anything like that. No. I just started using it at a young age, and one thing led to another, and I guess I crossed that invisible line somewhere down the line because it became a problem in my life. I always think, and I always thought that my higher power had something for me to do, even as a child coming up. But I just kept running. And so it is what it is. A lot of people say, you know, if you had a chance to go back and change something in life, would you change it? I wouldn't change anything because, you know, your past is your most valuable access. So without my past, I'm nothing. And, you know, I embraced my past, what I did, and because of the past is where I'm at today. And one of the best decisions that I made for myself, in my whole entire life, was to seek treatment. Best decision or none. And the second decision was to want recovery for myself, not for family, friends, jobs, or anybody,
right,
but for myself.
What was your jumping off point? What was the moment that you finally said, you know, I like to say we're saved by grace, and I believe that it's, you know, we turn towards God and He turns towards us, and there's a moment of desperation. We pray out, we call out, we find a meeting, we do something. What did you do? What was your jumping off point look like?
I was talking about that today with my homegirl. We're up in the lovely state of Georgia, enjoying the people of Georgia. But I was telling my homegirl today, when it's time, it's time. I had a Vietnam veteran walking the street 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I run out my house being paranoid. And I asked him if he had saw anybody around my house, and what he told me was that I needed to go seek help. Now, my normal makeup would have been to tell him, well, how you going to tell me to seek help? And you walk in the streets at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. No, I didn't have any smart answers toward him. I absolutely told him he was correct. And that's what got the ball rolling for me as far as seeking recovery from another addict just walking the streets at 3:30 in the morning. What do you think about that?
Interesting.
Sort of like a Vietnam angel, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the angel touched you and you... Yeah, go ahead.
I tell you another interesting thing happened to me, too, because when I first started this journey, I started on the journey of Maddie telling me that if I cleaned up my act, she would let me back in the house. I think I'm not going to say all, but I'm going to say at least 30% of us always got a con coming in recovery to save a job, a marriage, get the kids back, get off of probation. All of it got some kind of angle. We all come in here with some kind of angle instead of trying to get cleaned up for ourselves. So a lot of times, that's what starts the journey, the come. And hopefully you hear something along the way. But I heard Dr. Sherman doing a chalkboard talk, and he was talking about older guys coming in and having nothing left but a job. And that's the only thing I had when I came to recovery was a job. My family was gone. And he did this chalkboard study. And then he started talking about suicide. And that scared me. I began to listen a little bit more after he did this little illustration on the board. That was very interesting to me.
So now what happens? Okay, so the Vietnam veteran goes in there, and now you go in, now you went to rehab, you needed to go on detox. How far down the scale did you go?
Yeah, I went to rehab, and I left rehab, and I went to a. Well, hey, you down the scales when you go started checking it. I don't think nobody that had no problem checking no crazy house, do you think? So you know you got a problem if you willingly checking in now. So I'm in there. And I'm in there for a little while, but I'm in there on a con now. I don't want to cause no problem, but I'm in there because my whole objective to being there is to get back in with my family. Not because I'm 50 pounds underweight, I'm gray, I got 3 teeth, I don't have no hair, I'm gray and all skin falling off. Not because of that. I'm in trying to get back in with my family. So my perspective about recovery was way out because I'm still cunning. If you understand what I'm talking about.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, but
yeah.
But if you get there, if you get in recovery, you got some cons ready there that already know the game, you getting ready to play on them. And they begin to tell you the truth.
That's right.
And they begin to bust your bubble as you try to make a move. They already tell you what you're getting ready to do way before you do it. So this 25 years has been a blessing. And I'm a strong for sponsorship. Sponsorship really turned me around because when I got out of treatment, they told me to get a sponsor, and I got an older gentleman that took a liking to me and sponsored me up until his death. And I'm always grateful for that opportunity that he allowed me to. He really helped me a lot. And to this day, I still do a lot of stuff that he taught me at the beginning.
So now you're back. Okay, you're out in there, and you went to rehab, and what they tell you? If you don't, okay, you spent your money on rehab, you had a free ride, or you had enough cash. Got a free ride, right? You got a free ride in rehab?
Yeah, I didn't spend my money.
I didn't know that, but I kind of sensed it.
Even though the company who I worked for that allowed me to go to treatment, one of the first things of gratitude I did was write that company and thank them so much for allowing me to go to treatment. That's how grateful I was for that opportunity to go to treatment. Now, I hadn't wrote them a letter since, but I wrote them a gratitude letter for that, for allowing me to go to treatment. Of course, I'm a strong believer after you get out of treatment to, if you can, get in a halfway house with people that's trying to do what you're trying to do before you go back to your family or wherever you're going to get, have some structure in your life. Even though Maddie had a home and everything, I was living in a halfway house, and a lot of times I would go visit Maddie and then I would go back to the halfway house. But 90% of the time I always stayed at the halfway house because that's where I had all my structure at.
Hello. Now, I remember in the meetings, you would say that you were 9 months sober before you got the keys to the house, right? Was that it?
Yeah. Hey, ain't that pretty cool?
Yeah, it is.
That took a long time there, right? And that was just a key to the house. That wasn't like living at the house. That was like it was okay. You could come by, all right?
Well, that's enough about you. When did Maddie get into Al-Anon? You there, Maddie? Tell us about when did you realize you're with your husband? He's an alcoholic, and the only way you're going to save yourself is you're going to have to seek treatment on another level. When did that happen?
You know the way it happened. I went to Al-Anon I'm not an authority Al-Anon, no spokesperson for Al-Anon. I can only share my experience, strength, and my hope. When I first went down them because she was in treatment, I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. The only thing I heard was a bunch of women crying and talking about how they was trying to kill themselves because their husband drank. And, you know, I had to stop and think about that. And I asked them, why do you want to kill yourself? Kill the problem. You know, that's all I want to tell. Kill the problem. So I didn't go back to Al-Anon for quite a while. And that was back in 1986. CP went back into treatment, and when he did go back into treatment, we weren't together because I left him. I got tired of living with no lights, no gas, no water. And so I left CT. When CT was 3 years sober, he said he wanted his family back. And I had to think about that, you know, because I had went through all the ups and downs of the broken promises, the broken dreams, all them lies that go with, you know, with the addict alcoholic, as he said, conning. So I thought about it. He was 3 years sober, and I'm like, okay, we can try this again, see what happens. In 92, so I've been now 21 years now. In 92, we went to a conference, and I went to an Al-Anon meeting, and I heard something different. I heard people talking about taking care of themselves and what they were doing to take care of themselves. And that, for me, you know, that sparked the plug. That's what I need to learn how to do. I need to learn how to, because CT and I didn't got back together, and every time we got into an argument, only thing I could think of is all the things he did. All the things he did. And I kept going there, and I had to get past that. You know, I had to get past that. And I had to learn how to do that. And when I went to that Al-Anon meeting in January of 92, I heard people talked about how they worked these steps and what they were doing a little differently. So I went home and found them meeting after the conference, and I heard the same thing in that meeting. And I learned it wasn't about him anymore. It was about me. And what?
Wow, that's an eye-opener, isn't it?
Yes, it was. It wasn't about him anymore. It was about me. Learning to put me first. Well, actually, I had to learn to put God first because, see, we work those same 12 steps as AA. But, see, we make it a little bit simpler with our first three steps. Say, I can't, he can, I think I let it. You know? And we say we have no power over people, places, or things. And we have to accept that. See, you know, with being an Al-Anon, we so used to taking care of business or attempting to take care of business, trying to be in charge of everything. You know? That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, God, yes, playing God.
And to know that I didn't have to do that anymore, that was a relief, you know? That was a relief.
I bet.
So I started doing things a little bit differently. I started doing things for me first. I learned a new language. I learned the word no.
Oh, no is a complete sentence, right? Yeah, that's a bad. No is a complete sentence. And there's also another word that scares alcoholics to death. It's like a foreign language. You might as well say it in Greek. The word is boundary. They have no idea what that word means. They can either give one or nor take one. And if you give one to them, they will automatically challenge it.
He knows what it means today. He asked me one time when I told him no, he says, why? I says, because I said so, period. So he looked at me like, okay, guess I won't ask you that anymore. But, you know, with this program, to be honest with you, I've been consistent because I heard Bobby, the guy who ran the treatment center where CT was, the last time, and he talked to me, and he says, Maddie, whatever you do, stay consistent. And if you stay consistent, I promise you things will get better. So what I did, I found me a seed in Al-Anon because, see, I had to learn a lot of things. I had to learn how to communicate with Tiki. We hadn't lived together in the same house for 3 years. So I had to learn how to live with him sober.
Yes.
That was difficult. You know, he was still the same person. Only the difference was he wasn't drinking and he wasn't drugging. Now, was he still lying? Yeah. But,
you know what I've noticed? You know, Maddie, what I've noticed a lot? Some folks get sober. It happens to men and women. And soon after, not a lot, but to some, there's a divorce. And it's always like initially that would surprise me that, wow, for his wife got sober. You would think that he would be happy and want to keep the marriage, but there would be a divorce. And vice versa, the wife, the husband got sober, and they were like different people. There were control issues. You know, there was a lot of control issues. If the woman's drinking, the husband's in control. Now, all of a sudden, she's not drinking, and she's trying to get behind the driver's seat, and he's not going to have any of that, and vice versa. So the interaction is like a whole new relationship. Do you see that?
Yes. And that's where Al-Anon comes in, okay? It does. For me, that's where Al-Anon comes in, because I had to learn how to deal with, you know, make some changes in my behavior. We had to learn how to communicate with each other all over again, where we would listen to each other. We had to learn to do that. I had to learn how to say things without using so many four-letter words. you know, so I had to learn to stop going back and saying, remember, I had to learn all that. I learned that using those tools of this program, you know. I don't have a lot of tools that we use, you know. We have our do's and don'ts. We call our toolbox, and I'm sure they have them to an AA. But you know what? I have to say this. In order for me to understand, accept alcoholism as a disease, I'm a reader. I got me a big book.
Okay.
And I read that big book, the first 164 pages. Went back and did study with the big book because I needed to understand it. And then what was very helpful to me was chapter 9 in the big book, the family after. You know, that was very important to me. And I use that a lot. I share that with a lot of women that I sponsor as well. When they come in and ask me to sponsor them, I tell them one of the things I suggest is they get them a big book. We have our big book, Alcoholism, the family, Alcoholism for Family and Friends of Alcoholics, and that's our book. And it's good, and it's teaching us how to take care of ourselves and setting boundaries and all of this good stuff. But in order to accept alcoholism as a disease, we have to also get us a big book and understand what we're reading in that. We'll learn how to take care of ourselves, but we got to understand our loved ones as well.
That's right. And then
I agree 100%.
Chapter 8, Two Wives.
Pardon?
Yes. We read Chapter 8, Two Wives.
Chapter 8, To the Wives, is really good.
Yes.
But Chapter 9 is for me. Chapter 9 played a big role. Also, I go to a lot of open AA meetings as well.
Yes.
And I stay consistent with my Al-Anon meetings. I stay consistent.
Yes.
You know, I'm an Al-Anon.
Okay.
Did you ever hear of an Al-Anon? It's alcoholic and an Al-Anon. An Al-Anon.
Okay.
I made that word up.
Okay.
I go to AA. Well, I'm creative, you know. I'm an Al-Anon. Or I'll say I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs instead of doing a specific identity. I believe, you know, the Al-Anon, as a grateful Al-Anon, we have conference-approved material. And the Big Book is not conference-approved.
And you're absolutely correct. But, you know...
Yeah, I think it's incorrect that they should do that, but I think this is going to be funny. AA really does not have conference-approved literature, per se. And I believe Al-Anon thought we did, and that's why you guys did it. There is a movement trying to get the Big Book as conference approved literature. I don't know if that'll come about, but it is good information, and you got to know what the enemy looks like. I mean, how else can you deal with them?
Well, you know, the thing of it is, before Al-Anon Big Book, when Al-Anon first started, you know what they used? They used the Big Book. Most of them used the Big Book. Okay.
Sure.
AA. That's what they use. Now, when I come along in Al-Anon 21 years ago, it's not conference-approved literature. And that's fine because I don't use the Big Book in my meetings because it's not conference-approved.
Right.
I only use conference-approved literature in my meetings.
Right.
But what I do for myself, for my recovery, to help me with my recovery, that Big Book is essential to me as well. My Al-Anon book, it helps me set the boundaries. I had to find myself. I changed a lot of words in that book to make it personal for me. Because everything in that book, you know, it talks about, like I said, taking care of myself. When I was trying to manage somebody else's life, mine was unmanageable. Guess what? I wasn't going to the doctor. I wasn't doing anything I needed to do for me. My life was in knots. And they were okay. They were still doing what they needed to do. When I let go of all of that, I started doing for me first. That felt good. You know, and I do's and don'ts. You know it says. It says, do play, find recreation, you know. Take it easy. Tension is harmful. You know, it tells me all those things I need to do.
The three C's. How about the three C's?
Oh, the three C's. I didn't cause it. I can't control it, and I sure can't cure it. You know, we read those three C's in our welcoming to the newcomer because they need to hear that. I needed to hear that also when I went to my first Al-Anon meeting.
Me too.
I need to do that. Because, see, as an Al-Anon, what do? We try to control it. We think, well, if we pour it out, we won't have it to drink. What do? He go buy some more. You know, that's trying to control it. Oh. I didn't cause it. He was an addict and alcoholic when I met him. So I know I didn't cause it. Trying to cure it, I figured if I just took everything away, that would help him say, oh, it ain't here, I don't want it anymore. That didn't work. No. So, no, I didn't cause it. I can't control it. I can't cure it. And I accepted that. But, see, we don't know that pre this program because we never heard it. I felt it was my job to help my husband. You know, I also felt it was my job for him to be responsible for my happiness. But you know what? In this program, why would I give him that much power over my happiness? In this program, I learned that's my responsibility, not his. And I embrace that.
That's very interesting.
What a good program.
Yeah.
It is. It's an awesome program. It works. They say Al-Anon is not for everybody. It's for those who want it. People come.
Well, I'll
people
say that
leave.
With AA, too. I say that with AA, too. This is a program. When we start a meeting, Harold did it, but most folks aren't going to go for it. And I heard this a long time ago, and it's a great idea. When we start a meeting, well, everybody's here with a nudge from the judge or has paperwork. Please raise your hand. Will the person sitting next to you please sign off on the document? AA is for people who want it, not for people who need it. You're free to go or you're free to stay.
Yeah.
We're not part of the punishment. You know, you don't. We're force anybody to do it. If people say, "Well, if I wasn't forced, I wouldn't have got well." You know, I believe agency is the cornerstone of recovery. It's all suggested. We don't force anybody to do anything. We don't force you to stop drinking. We don't force you to work the steps. We don't force you to sit in the meeting. We don't force people. You got to want it. If you want it, you'll get it. If you don't want it, some people get it. But I don't think it's worth the trade.
And that's what we tell people when they come to the rooms also and they want to talk afterwards, you know? And it says, well, I just need the pain to stop. Well, sweetie, in order to get the pain to stop, you're going to have to do something a little bit different. You know? That's what we come to do, something a little bit different. Take the focus off of him and put it on you. Let's turn that energy around, you know? And that's what we learned to
do. Yeah, they're not used to that. It takes, yeah. Time takes time, and it's
it
a program. It's a progress. Yeah, it's a pro. You know, people they're going to come in. It's like they're going to the alcoholic or the drug addict wants to take a pill, and then they're going to be okay. It doesn't work that way. We have to do certain things. We have to do, and it's a trudge. Which, yeah, the trudge is a shoulder to shoulder journey and a walk with purpose, shoulder to shoulder, and it's progress, not perfection. So we do a little bit every day. As long as we're progressing, we're okay. It's when we stop progressing, and it's a spiritual. I tell my sponsees is in AA that if you really want to be a good sponsor in AA, go to Al-Anon. You're going to be dealing with a lot of drunks, and this is going to be a big help to you. You know, so, some do, some don't. Or I'll tell them, you know, Al-Anon is postgraduate AA. The old timers, they don't want to hear stuff like that. No. I quit drinking. I'm not even going to quit smoking because I quit drinking, and that's all I'm willing to do. It's as far as I can go. And you know what? It's okay. Nobody's going to tell you any different than that. You know, we wish you would progress spiritually, but if you can't, you can't. Now, your parents, now you have children. How are your children doing? Has the disease been manifested with your kids?
You know, my daughter's doing great. She went to Alateen. She went through Alateen and so forth. And when she was up in New Orleans, she was at Tulane, working on her master's. And she called me one day and asked me to send all her Alateen books to her, and I did. And what she did was she had a classmate whose father was an alcoholic, and she gave her books, and then she found an Al-Anon meeting in New Orleans and took it to her. She asked her teach. How did she know all this? And she told she grew up in Alateen and that her dad was an alcoholic, an addict, and her mom was an Al-Anon. My son, on the other hand, he didn't get this. He always said he didn't do drugs. But I believe what's dark always comes to the light because, you know, I would always share people in the ass. I said, my son says he doesn't do drugs, but he has the behavior of a person that does. I've never seen it, okay? He went and got a job last year, and he went through a 3-week training program, and then the last week, and he passed all the tests. They did a random drug test, and he lost that job just as quick as he got it, you know? And he can't
He came up dirty. For what drug? What drug? What did he come up dirty? Alcohol? Coke? What was it? Marijuana?
No, cocaine.
Cocaine, okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, cocaine, I don't know if you know this, cocaine is water-soluble, so it doesn't stay in the system very long.
Exactly.
So that means he had recently did cocaine. Now, marijuana is a different critter. It's fat-soluble. It could stay in the system 30 days. But coke and alcohol, they're gone quick.
Exactly.
So that means he's been doing it. He's been doing it for a while, and he's been doing it regularly.
Exactly. you know. And you know, this program that I work is so awesome, because when he came home and he still was crying and lying and saying he didn't do anything, so, you know, I didn't say anything. I just looked at him. And when the second test finally came back and to confirm, and he looked at me, he says, "Okay, your son was a bad boy. That's all." You know what I said to him? I said, "You know what?" And I said, "That's your deal. That's your deal. That's you. There's nothing I can do about it." Then he looked at me, he said, "Is that all you got?" I told him, "Yes, that's all I got." See, he was waiting for the old me to show up, okay?
Is that all you got, happen. Ma? You gotta have more than that. Come on.
Yeah, that all I got. He was waiting for that old me to show up, and it didn't show up. And he couldn't believe it. Because, see, I've learned this program. He grew up in what drugs and alcohol did to our family. And he made that conscious decision to go that route himself. I didn't cause it. I can't cure it. I can't control it. I have no control.
You know, Maddie,
I've been like, pardon?
Let me tell you, in my experience, when they say that he made a conscious decision, I really believe that if he has the genetic propensity for alcohol, because of the way the genes are, and I've seen it, that until he's worked the 12 steps, it's really not his decision at that point. Once he starts, he really can't stop until he works a program. The decision, I like to think of it this way: a slip. We call it a slip in the program. Someone who goes out and drinks and drugs again before they've worked the 12 steps, and after they've worked the 12 steps, now it's a decision, it's a relapse. But before they work the 12, but that's my experience and opinion, which is, you know, like you get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 20 opinions. How about CT? Did CT show up when Junior came in?
Oh, yeah. Talk,
CT. Tell me, CT, what did you tell your boy?
I just told him I love him. You know, the behavior, when he came home, he had all that behavior working out, and he wasn't himself. So I already knew I was two steps ahead of him, because, you know, if you already know this, you know he's going to play one move, trying to get a rise out of you for the second move. So I already saw it. So I just said, you just had to do what you had to do, son. And I wasn't going to buy into the game. And his mom did a wonderful job, because he came home to do the alcoholic dope thing, start all the arguing and raising hell and trying to place fault somewhere else, but where it was, and it was all on him. So we learned something along this way, and the communication is better, and everything is different. I was really surprised how Maddie handled this way, but she handled it very well.
Now, where is he now? What's your boy doing now? Is it just hanging him in there? Is he working a program? He's just...
He's working. No. One of my friends in the program they've been talking off and on, so he still has to make a decision. You know how it is. You can't work with your own. I can work with yours.
No. Family, when it comes to family, all bets are off. I don't care how brilliant you are as a sponsor, or how much times you read in the big book, or how close you are to Jesus. When it comes to family, all bets are off.
That's exactly right. So I already knew we wasn't going to touch that. So he has to do what he has to do, and that's just the way that is.
Now, does it pain me? Yes, it does, you know, because that's my child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love him. And that's what I tell him all the time. I love him. He knows.
Now,
what our boundaries are, and I can enable him. You know, we've done that. He can't hold us hostage anymore. He used to do that for a long time, you know. He held us hostage for a long time. Remember when? And we'd open up the checkbook and we'd give him and we'd give him and we'd give. And this program, when it sunk in, that detachment with love, that's awesome. I say, son, the checkbook's closed. No, the bank is closed.
I love you, though, but the checkbook's closed.
The bank is closed.
The bank is closed. I love you.
No, that's learning to detach with love.
Yes.
Did it pain me again to say no? It did.
Yeah.
But see, I've learned in this program I couldn't continue to enable him. I couldn't continue to do that. There's a difference between helping and totally enabling.
Right.
And I've learned to recognize what we call the hook. You know, he called us a few months back, about 12:30 p.m. And he said, 12:30 p.m. on a Sunday night, and he says, this is your boy, and he was rambling. And I told him, I says, you know, I can't deal, don't call me with your drama. Good night. And I hung up. And she said, was that you? I says, yes. He says, what you doing? I said, I'm going to sleep. And I did. When I heard from him 2 days later, he figured it out.
Here you go, yes.
So what do you guys do now? Now, you sponsor? Do you sponsor ladies in Al-Anon? CT, you sponsor,
oh, yes.
I think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, I do. I sponsor lots of women in Al-Anon. They come to the house. I'll tell you a funny story, okay? I have an African gray parrot. And my parrot is, normally when people come over, my parrot goes to the front of the cage and she just listens. But I have one sponsoree who's been over enough where my parrot don't mind talking around her. So my sponsoree was there that day. We were sitting at the kitchen table, and she called and asked if she'd come over because she needed to talk, and I said yes. And she came, and she started sharing, and she was, I mean, just distraught, crying and sharing. And she said some things, and I was listening, and my burst down and said, what? She looks at Diamond, and she goes, okay. So she went on to share some more. And my bird said, oh, I can't say it because I'm on live, but my bird said the S word real long. And she looked and she said, so when we went to the meeting, the next meeting we went to, she told them in the meeting, she says, if Maddie sponsors y'all and you go to her house, go outdoors and talk because her bird has lots of opinions.
Sort of like a co-sponsor.
Exactly.
New accountability partner.
Yeah, my bird is something else. But yes, I do sponsor. And, you know, sponsorship is very important to me because it helps. You know, every time I go through the steps with a young lady, it just helps me in my recovery process even more.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I go through the steps. Not only do I go through the steps with my sponsors, but I also go through the traditions.
Oh, you know, I never do that with my. That's a good idea. I never do that with my sponsors. I never consider that. Most people don't really know how the traditions work at all. Most people just trounce on them.
Yeah, we do the traditions. We go through, because, see, that's very important to help understand how the fellowship of Al-Anon works. That's the glue.
That's a great idea. That's a great suggestion. Harold?
Absolutely. It's so valuable to, first of all, know that you're not alone and other people have gone through just what you have. And then secondly, to get some new ideas and what we call take the best and leave the rest. To listen to things and really pick up some tips on how other people have done things. Now, of course, for people that aren't familiar with Al-Anon or AA, it's important to say that we're not here to fix anyone. We share our experience, strength, and hope.
That's right.
And you might hear something that's really valuable. We're just talking about how it was for us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is how it works in our family day. I'll tell you a funny story about when I needed CT to hear me because I had something on my heart I needed to get off. I need to get off my heart. And I needed to have this conversation with him. And I don't, you know, going to the meetings and the open AA meetings, every time somebody share, everybody was quiet and listened. So I decided I'd do start this off with the big book. So I told CT to come to the table. We need to have a meeting. And he did. I said, get your book. He got his book. I got my book. I told him, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. And then when we finished, I said, then there will be no crouch talk.
Yeah.
I used that format. And then I went on to tell him what was, you know, some of the things that I needed him to hear. And he was actually able to hear without cross-talking and trying to over-talk me and so forth. That worked
yes.
for that day.
For that day.
You know something, Hal? Especially with couples, I'm not even just saying couples in recovery. I'm just talking about couples in general. Especially when you're discussing a problem in the family or something with one another, we've learned how to communicate by sitting at a table and sitting across from one another and communicating rather than talking from room to room. That was very valuable that we learned along this path of the communication, listening to, and not get what I'm saying defensive, like if Maddie shares something that she dislike about something that I'm doing, after I hear her out, I acknowledge, okay, I heard what you said, rather than go back to the old way of saying that she said it, I would say, well, you do this and I do that and I point the finger. Well, what was different with this conversation now is that you hear the other person out, what they have to say, and you accept what was good, bad, or indifferent, and you don't try to flip the script on them and everything, which is something totally different than the way we used to conversate. We used to always have a conversation or an argument or whatever, and nobody's ever in the same room while this conversation going on. So you got these voices loud, and when you do get them together, everybody's screaming and shouting, and you're ready for the police to show up next. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
You know,
yes. You know. Go ahead, Maddie.
You know, you said something very important, you know, when you first started. And you said about couples after, you know, being in recovery, they get divorced and they go to divorce court and all this good stuff. And I think one of the problems is once your loved one gets in recovery, this is for our family. I'm going to be honest. I believe, even though CT and I got back together, if I would not have gone into Al-Anon and made some changes in my life, we would have been in divorce court. And I know that. because it wasn't about him anymore. He was sober. I had some issues that I needed to deal with, and they weren't issues that had started with my being married to him. I had to make some changes of some things that I was brought up with that I thought was right. I brought my own issues into the relationship. I brought my behavior of I'm the boss and you listen to me. If I don't agree with your way and I don't want to do it at all, I brought all this behavior with me. And you know,
yeah, I understand a lot. Yeah, it's coming.
Uh-huh.
It's coming to the agreement that if it wasn't the alcoholic, it really didn't matter. That the disease of codependency and the Al-Anon would have manifested itself with or without the alcoholic.
That's
because
right.
It's of its own. It has its own component, and that's what makes it work. They think, well, they had, I don't have an alcoholic in my life. Doesn't matter. You'll find somebody else. You'll find a sex addict. You'll find someone else that you can latch on to make your disease flourish. So the alcoholic is just convenient. It was easy to latch on to them. They're always looking for somebody to take care of them.
And you're absolutely correct.
Convenient or unfortunate?
Yes.
Oh, man. What a guy.
Really good. We're going to have to start winding it down, but I like to give you this. I wrote experience, strength, and hope. If we draw our attention only to ourselves, our work is not from God. What we share in our meetings is in our sponsorship and in our lives is our experience, strength, and hope. Experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift or carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message of recovery that helps keep us sober. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. And the next right thing is not to take that first drink, that first hit a crack of alcohol, or the next shot of dope. The clean house, as suggested in the outline of the 12 steps found in our basic text, and always to trust in God and the process of love, tolerance, and service that he gave us. I like a quote from Mark Twain. It said, if you always do the next right thing, it will surprise some and amaze the rest. You have any last words, guys?
Well, I do. I want to say thank you so much, for the opportunity to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. Also, can I tell about my group?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll send you a copy of this recording for your own archives.
Okay. Well, our group is the Courage to Change group, and we meet every Wednesday at 6:30, right there in Missouri City at Lamplighters Club. Every Thursday, we have a book study. I'll know how it works for family and friends of alcoholics and the path to recovery every Thursday at 12 noon right there at Lamplighters. And then we have a meeting Sunday in Missouri City.
Yeah, I was going to say that's in Missouri City. That's a suburb of Houston,
yes.
Southwest corner.
Missouri City, Texas.
Right there at the Cartwright and 1092.
Correct.
And we meet every Sunday at 6:30. So we have three meetings a week.
That's terrific.
And UCT, you got any last words?
No, I just want to say thank you so very much for letting us be a part of your show tonight, Joseph. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, CT. It was real. I learned a lot. The one thing nice about doing these shows is that I learn just as much from them, I think, as they do from doing the show. It's really quite an honor to have you on, both of you. You too, Maddie. Thank you so much for extending yourself and doing the service for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Al.
You're welcome.
Harold,
it's my privilege.
Any last words, Harold?
Well, I just really enjoyed listening to CT and Maddie, and it's another reminder that as people get into early recovery, we really need folks who will reach out to the family members, because they have just as many needs, maybe more, than the person early in recovery. The whole family's in recovery. It's a family illness, and it's family recovery. And so I just encourage everybody out there who's been around a while, go talk to the family members. And that's how they did it originally back in 1935 in Akron, Ohio, and all over the United States, New York City, everywhere. And we've got to get back to basics and do that again much, much more. I do that every week, and it's really a blessing for the families, but it's more of a blessing for the person reaching out. So don't take second best, guys. Really reach out to the families. It will really help your recovery. And God bless.
Thank you. God bless.
Well, thank you all. And in closing, I'll tell you, Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages. Yeah. We're all way over 300,000 hits to the website, probably pushing about 400,000 worldwide. We're very popular in Nepal. They really like our yak. No, we really are in Nepal. And if you're looking for solid sponsorship information, it's rumradio.org. So remember, we'll see you on the radio. Rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.